factors?
That's a great question. The company started as a Canadian income fund, and they had high dividend yields, long power purchase lives so that they could pay the dividends with some stability against those long purchase power lives. That sector hasn't done all that well, and you know, Atlantic Power from its high price came way down and had to cut the dividend a few times, and then we cut it out. Other people have been taken over. Some of them have shifted direction into what they're trying to do with their businesses. And then in the U.S., I think is really more comparable to what we are now. You have these big independent power producers, and they tend to have very short PPA lives and a lot of merchant, which is you don't have a long-term contract. You're selling into the wholesale or the spot market. They have high leverage. So I think we tend to now track them more. The interesting thing about this is, you know, you look at it and say, well, it's only a $280 million market value company. A lot of these companies are $1 billion or $10 billion. Are we too small to be public? You know, should we just sell it off to some private equity group? And, you know, there's a case to be made for that, but trying to think like Bean and flip it around and look at the positive side. It also means that some of these things like CHP, we're looking at these industrials, you know, maybe a 10 megawatt and it's maybe a $10 million project or so, $10, $20 million projects. They're too small for those big $10 billion companies and $2 billion companies. And they're too big for a lot of little entrepreneurial companies. So what we like about that sector is it's really right up our alley. We've been developing projects for 30 years, and we know how to develop them. We know how to have a good success rate. But as far as direct competitors, there really aren't any peers that I can think of that closely match us. You either have Canadians, which have a very different profile, or the Americans, which are much larger. And so we're trying to turn that into an advantage and say we can be nimble and we can do smaller things, and they'll move the needle for us on growth. So
are you a U.S.-based company now?
Well, the company is incorporated in Canada. We're having our meeting here, but the headquarters is in Dedham, Massachusetts, outside of Boston, and roughly 80% of the shareholders are now American shareholders, and roughly 80% of the cash flow from the business comes out of the U.S. So it's really shifted over time. And, you know, big part of it is we shut down a lot of plants in Ontario. We're going through that process this year, and Ontario is oversupplied with power. They have greenhouse gas obligations they threw on top of the plants, and people are having a hard time running their plants with all the oversupply and then all the costs from the greenhouse gas side. So we had a deal where we mothballed our plants through this year. It turned out to be it's a good financial deal through this year, and then we'll see if we get to a point where there's more demand and less supply, if that comes back into balance again in the future.
So would you consider yourself in a few years a total U.S. company?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, we still have good hydro assets in Canada, and we like our Canadian employees, and so we're not trying to get out of Canada. We would love to get a lot more revenue if Ontario had the right supply and demand and the right policies. We'll go back to selling power in Ontario. But it's really more market-driven than we haven't made any decision to get into or out of the market. So.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to congratulate you on reducing the debt by $1 billion in 5 years. That's tremendous. My debt's gone up $1 billion. However, that's really something. I know you've sold assets to do that, but anyways, what I'd like to see is, are there any chances that the dividend will be brought back in even annually instead of quarterly? I mean, a lot of people would like to see that. And also, if the dividend was brought back, possibly the shares could go up. You could sell off more stock and reduce the indebtedness even more. And the money that you save there would go to shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the debt is on a fixed percentage.
Right.
Shareholders, you don't have to pay them 4%. You could pay them 1.5% at bank rate or 1% or some countries in, have a negative interest rate. In that case, we'll pay the debt. But we don't know what's going to happen. It could happen.
That's an interesting concept. That. You think we could get away with a negative dividend? You want to send us money every quarter?
Anyways, no. The other question is, you have a plant in Nipigon. Why are you buying gas to generate electricity there when you've got a very fast-flowing river?
Yeah, well, so let me hit all those. But first of all, you bring up a good point when you talk about the chairman the board's gone from 9 to 6 people, and we did that as a cost reduction method. In fact, when I was talking about the directors, I forgot the chairman was behind me, but that's hard to do. I mean, I talked to some people when we talked about cutting costs, and, you know, I told the board, look, we cut from 110 to 42, and we've got to lead by example, but most people said, yeah, good luck with that. The board's never cut their own size down, and this board went from 9 to 6. And the chairman led that process, and it was very difficult, but it was done well, and it was to the shareholders' benefit, which I think that's, you know, you could talk all about servant leadership and shareholder alignment, but I think, you know, what are you really doing about cost? Are you increasing the board or reducing the board? Are you buying shares with your own money? Those are more realistic things to me about alignment. So I want to thank the chairman for that and apologize, I forgot him when I was going across the row there. And then in terms of the dividend, again, the five things you can do, you can, you know, I won't go through them again, but one of which is you can pay out a dividend. The problem we have with paying out a dividend and why all these IPP companies have had trouble maintaining dividends and have had a very volatile record and a number of them have gone bankrupt is it's a volatile business. It's up and down. And a dividend is a commitment to pay out, you know, over a number of years. So it's, in this business, dividends don't get treated very well by investors because they say it's very uncertain. I can't rely on that dividend because who knows where power prices are going to be in 3 years. And in fact, there are some companies, I talked to a guy on a board of a company in the U.S. yesterday, they're paying a 7% dividend yield. They're paying out 100% plus of their operating income. And he said, you know, the market just doesn't believe it. So our share prices are getting no value for the dividend because everybody thinks this sector is too volatile and too risky. So I think, A, we would have to feel like we've paid off all the debt we need to pay. Our shares are now trading at a premium or at intrinsic value. We don't have anything intelligent to do with money inside the company. We don't have any of these 10, 12, 14% uses of capital. And we don't want to mislead people and say, here's a dividend, and then we can't sustain it. So I think it's going to be very hard for us to get to a point where this is a good dividend vehicle. And as I said last year in this meeting, you know, people, there's a Vanguard dividend fund, there's utilities, there's pharmacies, there's bigger companies that have much more stable business outlooks that could pay a dividend and then deliver on that commitment. I mean, the last thing you want to do is somebody buys it and thinks, oh, I can rely on this dividend the next 5 years, and then it's, you got to cut it out, and then you reinstate it, and you're back up and down. And so right now, I think we've got much better things to do for shareholders. If we can make 10 or 12% investments in a world where some people are getting negative returns on their money and money markets are 1% or whatever. And then the second thing is just the structure of the industry doesn't really align itself with paying sustainable dividends. And the evidence of that is how many of the power companies stopped paying dividends or had to cut them out over time. And then as far as more hydro in Ontario, we like hydro, but it's very difficult to get it built. Environmentalists don't always support it. They think it interferes with salmon spawning and things like that. But our hydro, we have one in Curtis Palmer in New York on the Hudson River. It was built in 1913, and it's got a FERC license that runs to 2040. It's got a purchase power agreement that runs to 2026. So it's one of our key pieces of the company. We've got more in the West, and we've got a couple up in Canada, and we like those. I mean, hydro is great. It's just hard to get them done anymore because there's so much anti-land use or anti-river use sentiment. So it's interesting. Everybody wants to do the environment, but try getting a hydro facility done. Everybody likes the environment, but I tried to get 2 wind farms done in Vermont, and you couldn't get it done. And I finally said to the guys, hey, guys, you want me to put them underground? I mean, what do you're telling me you're all green. What about, and you can't get it done. So it's very difficult to get any kind of power plant, nuclear, coal, gas, wind, solar. There's a reason why everybody hates one of those. And that's an advantage, too, do the bean thing again, flip around. Let's look at the positive side. We got a bunch of gas plants in San Diego. If we can get them contracted and we can hang on to those sites for 7 years, the fact that they're not buying any new and building any new plant in California and they're shutting down nuclear plants is at some point going to shift the supply and demand. So the old saying in commodities is the cure for low prices is low prices because it destroys supply and it increases demand. So I think we're in a business where it's very hard to do new plant. And right now, some of our plants aren't valued very highly. But the longer those low prices go on, we almost cheer for let's have a collapse in prices and really go low because we have PPAs the next 7 years to cover us. And that'll really flush out some of the supply. But you're never sure. So we can't, it's an uncertain business. So we have to be sharp about it. I think, you know, to your advantage, you have people who have flown this route for 30 years. And every time they've landed it safely and they've made money for shareholders. And everything we do is to try to show shareholders that we're invested with you, we're partners, you know, we're going to sell it when it makes sense to sell it, we're going to buy when it makes sense to buy.
Thank you for that. I don't necessarily agree with you, however.
That's okay.
That's your privilege. The other thing is, when I came in this morning, some of the shareholders were looking for where the meeting is. Well, I've been to a meeting here in the basement. I've been on the second floor. We didn't know where it was this year. Could you possibly, if it's held here again, mark where it's held at? Thank you.
Yeah, we'll remember that. Thank you. Sorry about that. Hope we didn't lose anybody. They're not wandering around the halls.
My name is John McNeil. I was a member of the board of directors of Atlantic Power for since inception 2004 till now, about a year ago. I wanted to mention that I've kept my shares in the company. Can't hear me? I've kept my shares in the company and my debt positions. And I think you've seen this morning the reason why. You've got a very competent management team and a strong board of directors. It leads from the top. I was involved in the cost cutting a couple of years ago, and I agreed 100% with what the board's done there. So I think you've heard a lot about the trials and tribulations of this business. It's a very challenging business, but we've got the right team working on it. You'd be pleased to know I do have a question. And I think we've heard a lot of the issues around the business, but one I think we'd like to hear a little more about is the impact of technology, because industry's changing very rapidly. We've got shale gas, low gas. We've got old plants, and one of our challenges in getting our PPAs renewed is renewals on reasonable terms because we face the new technologies. So perhaps you could comment on that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We do have some older plant, and technology is evolving. So the sites and the permits and all that have some value in the interconnections, but the facilities themselves you have to keep upgrading And I think we do a good job of maintaining the plants. We spent a lot of time recently, so GE moved to Boston. So they're our neighbor now. We're 30 minutes outside, and they're in the high-rent district in the Seaport, and we're out in Dedham. But we can get there. And one of the things they've really focused on in power is data and the ability to use data in a more real-time basis. And they're spending a lot of time, money, and effort on how do you make these plants more efficient. How do you make them more flexible? How do you use the data more in a real time? They have this whole industrial automation and data analysis drive at GE. So we've gotten alongside them, and we're trying to suck as much knowledge as we can out of them without paying them too much. They've looked at our fleet, and they're making recommendations on things we could do. We've talked to other people besides GE as well about what we can do at the fleet. At the plant level, I always tell the plant guys, look, at cost cutting is just not about mindless 20% everybody goes or whatever. It's we got to be frugal, but we also want to be innovative. Now, it's, you know, what's a smarter way to do this? And so the part of that is is using the technology. And I think our guys are pretty good. I was talking to Dan Rohrabaugh the other day about how this is rolling out in the fleet and how people are taking it. And there's one plant manager who loves to have the highest quality lube oil. You can get these lube oils that last 100 years, and it's three times as expensive as a regular lube oil. And so the guy's a geek, you know, and he lube oil lasts 100 years. It's the best on the market. And Dan said, yeah, but the plant only lasts 20, and we're buying lube oil for 100, and it costs three times as much. And so grudgingly, he dragged the guy back to, okay, we'll get the cheaper lube oil. So that's a very mundane level. And then I think what GE is trying to do is very interesting. And because as you put the intermittent stuff on, the gas and the solar, it's intermittent. And oftentimes wind plants will blow when demand's not very high. And so all of a sudden you've got to dump a lot of gas, and you're getting down to where you might even have to turn down coal and nukes, and they're not made to operate that well. Our CCGTs are not really made to cycle like that. So we're going to have to spend a lot of time and money figuring out how to accommodate all this intermittency into the thing. And our view is some of our plants, if we can make them more flexible and nimble, will have more value longer than even though they're a little bit older. So
I just had a question about the potential for reworking some of the preferred shares. TransAlta earlier this year, announced a proposal where they were offering new preferred shares for all the preferred share class out there, because the capital structure gets complicated. You know, yields have changed a lot and prices have gone down. And there's an opportunity to potentially help common shareholders by reducing a bunch of the face value of the preferreds by offering new preferreds. Is that something that you guys have talked about? It didn't work for them. They decided to withdraw that. Yeah. But is that sort of thing something you guys have talked about as well as an opportunity?
Yeah, we've definitely looked at that. I think we're more focused on debt and common right now, but we have looked at preferred and some of these swaps where you can reduce the notional value of the preferred. We followed that deal, and actually Gil put it on our plate, and we followed it. It didn't get done. But it's definitely something we think about, and we've got on our to-do list of, you know, keep an eye on when the time is right to do that. But right now, our available cash, there's such compelling uses on debt and common equity, unless we really came up with a compelling swap there to reduce the notional value, doesn't really make sense for us at this time. And that deal didn't get done, so... We'll keep looking at that. Every piece of the capital structure we want to stay on top of, and it's always price to value on those versus price to value, what we can do externally. What does that all add up to? Do we make more money running this the next 5 years or selling it to somebody else and letting everybody cash out? No.
Have you guys also been following the developments in Calpine, and do you have any thoughts on what's happening there?
Yeah,
also much bigger
yeah.
than you guys, and still private equity seems to be interested.
So. You know, I'm kind of skeptical myself, but I haven't studied it enough to really give you a firm answer. I mean, I know they talked about private equity might buy this independent power company in the United States, Calpine. They're leveraged 6x EBITDA already, where it will be 4x by the end of the year. And in private equity, I think when it gets conservative, they do 3x, and when the bubble just ahead of it, they were up at 5 or 6. And so 4 feels like, you know, it's a private equity-ish LBO level in a normal environment. And these guys are at 6, and somebody's going to go buy them and add on debt on top of that. You know, and then they're facing the same industry dynamics. So I think it's really a better time to be de-risking. But if private equity decides, you know, we're willing to bet that these power prices are coming back, and we're willing to put a bunch of debt on it, and the banks are willing to give us debt, that ought to lift everybody's share prices. I think Holly shared something that the share prices are up about 17% in the U.S. after having collapsed for the last couple of years. I mean, these guys were devastated, trading at 52 leak lows and all time since bankruptcy lows in some cases, and now they've had this pop because people think some private equity buyers may come in. I'm a bit skeptical until I see them happen. Maybe a merger between a couple of the IPPs will happen. I think it'll be good for us if somebody goes in and buys, it'll be one more option to look at. But that's another thing we look at all the time. So. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank everyone for coming here, and we appreciate your investment in the company and your interest in the company, and we'll try to make sure we land safely and then have a vision for how we grow the shares from here. And we're heavily invested alongside you, and so we have a sense of urgency to make that happen. Thank you.